In this podcast episode, we take a deep dive into the topic, how to protect yourself when leasing to marginal applicants and when to employ the options double deposit or more money up front, using a guarantor, or go for rent, lease surety, or similar assurance type services. Our guest today is Jaime Valdivieso of Uptown Realty Group, Keller Williams Metropolitan in Houston, Texas. Jaime has been a licensed Texas realtor for more than 5 years and has closed over 100 sales and leases during that time. He's a GoForRent power user and processes all of his lease transactions at GoForRent.com. Hear how he employs these three options to help protect his landlords and take applicants from marginal to approved. So we did an article about protecting yourself when leasing to marginal applicants. And this segment of the podcast would be pretty much discussing that topic in great detail. And in that topic, I went into three different areas that realtors and landlords can, options that they can use to protect themselves when leasing to marginal applicants. So we went into the double deposit and or more money up front, the guarantor or co-signer, and then lease surety type of products or a similar assurance type products that other companies are offering to give the landlord a little more leverage. So basically what I'm looking for out of this conversation with you is to discuss all three of those options and then go into detail about how you employ any of these things to help give the landlord a little more leverage and to be able to approve more applicants based on or using these three options. So let's go into the double deposit and more money up front. Generally, what happens is you have a client that has credits all beat up for whatever reason. It could be divorce or loss of job or whatever, just plain neglect. And you look at that and you have this initial interview where you take them on and you're asking all these questions. You know, how's your credit? And they'll say, well, and if they start off like that, you already know, okay, it's going to be a little challenging to get them approved. And when you go through these initial conversations with them, most of the time, some realtors or landlords will be like, well, you know, I'd just rather not deal with it instead of trying to find a way to make it work to where everyone's happy with it, because you don't know when that next applicant's coming and you don't know what that next applicant's going to look like. So I'm a true believer of working what you have in front of you to make sure that it will work for you and exhaust every option before you deny the applicant. So applicant comes along and they have unverifiable income, broken leases, late payments, or damaged credit. So we use these options to kind of strengthen the file, to give the landlord a little more leverage, and to make it work to where everyone's happy with it. So when it comes down to the double deposit, what's your take on using that method?
So the double deposit would really depend on, you know, the whole picture. You know, like when we look at the application, we need to see the whole thing. You know, like, okay, as you said, okay, credit, the income, the rental history, and then have a conversation with the applicant, you know, and see kind of like where is their liquidity. Sometimes they say, hey, you know what, I do have the income and I do have some savings that I can, you know, either put into the lease as a double deposit, or I can pay rent in advance, because I've had that proposals also that they want to do, instead of a double deposit, they want to do like a 2 or 3 months in advance. So both of those options are appealing to the landlord. But then, you know, like the double deposit, I usually recommend it, or like I would say, okay, let's consider it. If we know that the person have, you know, either enough savings that they can provide that, and that the landlord will be kind of like, okay, at least I have more money. The only thing with the double deposit is that they will have, you know, if the property is, you know, well taken care of and they make the payments on time, so they just have to be aware that the landlord have to return the deposit in full. So that's what I've seen sometimes, you know, landlords, they don't, even though they're supposed to keep the security deposit on a, you know, kind of like on an escrow account, I've seen that some of them, they end up, you know, spending that deposit. And then at the end, they're looking for, you know, the money to give it back to the tenant. So what I've encountered is that of kind of like sometimes it's a little bit of a pushback that they're not leaning towards the double deposit. Sometimes they prefer like rent in advance, so they don't have that issue.
Right. And I fully understand. And I've seen that as well. And you're right that the landlord should have that in a separate account. And most property management companies do that as well, because they're required to have an escrow account to hold the deposits. Now, in reference to the money up front, how are you calculating that? Are you adding those? So let's say they pay 3 months up, 3 months up front. Are you calculating that on the front end or on the back end? And what I mean by that is, let's say rent's due January 1st and they sign the lease January 1st and they want to pay 3 months up front. So are they paying January, February, and March and not have a payment until April? Or are they paying the 3 months up front to be tacked on to the back end of the lease?
It really depends on the tenant, actually. You know, I have a situation where that's what they wanted to do, and it wasn't because they had bad credit. It was because they didn't have enough credit history in the U.S. So what they're doing, it was like they paid 3 months in advance, but let's say they started January 1st, right, and they pay up till March, but they're also making payments for February and March. So technically, even though they paid in advance, you know, they're you know, like the way that I interpret that is that they're not going to pay, you know, the last 2 months of the lease. So it really, you know, it really depends on the kind of like how they're going to, like when the tenant applies, how they're going to do it and how they're going to propose it. But, you know, what I've seen is like, it's usually the months up front. It's not kind of like towards the end.
Got it. Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know. So here's the legal side of that now. So let's say that you're going to apply the 3 months to the end of the lease and lease starts on January 1. They pay 3 months up front. They still have a payment due February, March, April, and so on until they get to the last 3 months, which would be October, November, December. And let's say somewhere along the way, there's a default in the rent. They don't have June's payment. So that poses a legal issue in reference to trying to file an eviction on this thing, because the tenant will say, well, you're still holding 3 months of rent for me, so technically you can use those months as my payment for this June payment that I just don't have. And the landlord's take on that was that's supposed to be on the back end of it, so technically you're still late for June. So now you end up with this legal issue. Landlord wants to file an eviction. Tenant's saying, well, you're still holding these 3 months. So depending on how it's presented in court, the judge just may say, you're holding 3 months, use that for, exhaust those 3 months before you file an eviction. And I've seen it happen that way, which is, you know, kind of tricky. That's not the agreement we had in the beginning, but, you know, your landlords still need to be mindful of that if the tenant does default somewhere in between, that they have to or may have to use those 3 months to offset the eviction until those 3 months have been exhausted.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, it's so important. And I always, let's say, when we run into these scenarios, just to avoid that, like they need to have a rent roll, you know, like they need to make sure that, okay, all these payments, they're accounted for. And as you said, you know, like if they know that they have that money up front and they need to use it for June default, the way I see it is kind of like this, the tenant by doing that is kind of like having a savings account, like if for some reason they need to use those funds because they couldn't make the payment in June, they know that they have, you know, 2 months on that account that the landlord is holding. So that's maybe what I'm seeing, like on the proposal that I told you, maybe that's what he's thinking, you know. But you're right. You're right. It will really depend on kind of what the judge will determine is the best thing to do there.
Right. Hopefully it never gets to that point. If they have that kind of money to pay up front, you know, they won't have that issue.
True.
Close leases faster with Go4Rent. Applicants complete an online lease application, upload supporting docs, and pay their application fee. Go4Rent then sends you a notification of a new application. Go4Rent provides instant credit, criminal, and evictions reports, and also verifies the applicant's current employment and rental payment history. It's a free service for realtors and landlords. Sign up today at goforrent.com and start closing leases faster.
So let's discuss the guarantor co-signer aspect of it. So, you know, here in Texas, we have forms that are available to us, the TAR application for guarantor of residential lease. Do you use that form or you have the guarantor complete the regular lease application?
Usually we have them complete the application as well.
Okay. So when it comes down to the guarantor, what are your requirements for them? financial-wise, credit-wise?
Yeah, credit-wise, you know, we hope that it is above, you know, the 650 credit score. But mostly what we're looking on the guarantor is that if they have their own mortgage, that they have the financial stability to cover their mortgage or their rent, and then that additional rent that they're signing as a guarantor. So for me, it's mostly, okay, let's just see not only like the credit trend lines, you know, what is in their credit? Like, it's not only the score. And that's what I always tell people, like, don't get discouraged by like a low credit score. Like, you need to see the whole report and, okay, how much do you really owe? What are your monthly payments? Or how much do you make? But then you have to verify that. So, you know, with the guarantor, it's usually, you know, like I put a lot of like weight on their income and their trend lines on the credit report, because that will tell me how much are they really, kind of what's their financial responsibility on their own. And if they can add, you know, what the, you know, whatever the rent will be on the world, on when they're signing as a guarantor.
Correct. So my general take on that is I take a hard line on the income. You know, I need the income to be at least four times the rent amount, because they still have their own financial obligations that they have to adhere to. And then the credit, I like to see it a strong credit person when I'm looking at the file of the guarantor. Now, are you adding them to the lease agreement, or are you using the guarantor form?
It really depends, but we usually just keep it with the guarantor form. We don't add them to the lease.
Got it. So, in what instances would you use a guarantor? How do you decide whether or not the applicant should find a guarantor?
Well, usually, you know, like when they don't have enough, you know, when they don't have enough rental history or enough income. I think we used it once where the family was coming from like out of the country, but they did have, you know, the company that they were gonna work for. The owner of that company, he offered to be a guarantor just because they didn't have enough history here in the U.S. So in that instance, it, you know, it worked. We did, you know, the double deposit and the guarantor. And that's pretty much kind of like what led them kind of like accept the application. But it's usually when, you know, there's not enough history on the three ends, you know, like no rental history, no credit, or no income. So that's when I usually use it. And you can like that scenario where they're out of state or out of the country, or when it's kind of like a young applicant, and we use kind of like their, you know, their mother or like, you know, their parents to make their application like stronger.
Understood. Okay. So a couple of years ago, we started Lease Surety, and it's an assurance type of service that provides the landlord with a little more financial leverage in the event of a default. And after going around and around with this thing and really working it out to where everyone was happy with it, we came up with a grading scale that gave the landlord a little more leverage, but the tenant had to pay for it. And we understood that there's a certain threshold in reference to what the tenant would pay per month for the service that they would not want to exceed, or else they'll just go find another house. So we looked at things like their income, the amount of the income, the source of the income, their rental history, whether or not they had any late payments, how much rent they were paying, how much rent are they paying now compared to how much rent they're moving into. And then finally, we looked at the credit. And we took all of those matrix and came up with a grading scale for the applicant when it came down to seeing if they would fit into Lease Surety. Now, I'll tell you immediately that every applicant that comes through does not qualify for Lease Surety. Because if they're barely making the three times the rent amount, then I don't feel comfortable putting them into that program, because it creates an extra financial burden for them. So now that they're barely making three times the rent or short of three times the rent, and now you're asking them to pay even more money, that's just not a good fit for us. And if you have an applicant that's a habitual late payer or has a history of broken leases over the past 3 years, then that one might not be a fit as well. So generally what we see is for Lease Surety would be applicants that the credit is damaged for who knows what reason, but the income is good and the rental history is good. Or they may have had a few late payments, but not a habitual late payer. So we would try to slide them into Lease Surety, see if that would be a good fit for them, because sometimes they don't have the double deposit or the money up front. And then sometimes they don't have someone that they can rely on or ask to be a guarantor or co-signer for them. So lease surety is like the third option that we like to use to see if it will be a good fit for everyone. So the way that we designed it was that the tenant would pay a small upfront fee that would range from $100 to $300, and then a monthly fee for the duration of the lease that was between $20 and $50 a month. I think right now we're averaging right around $33, $34 a month for lease surety. And the way that we designed it was that if the tenant defaults on the lease and we have to file an eviction, then we would pay the rent to the landlord for up to 2 months minus the cost of the eviction. So we kind of rolled the cost of the eviction in there to where the landlord doesn't have any additional outgoing expenses, additional expenses with this process. So when we look at the end of the day, when we have an applicant, you have three options you can slide them into. The first thing that we're looking at is the double deposit or more money up front, like you said. If they don't have the funds for that, then the next option would be the guarantor. And if they don't have anyone for that, then that pushes us into lease surety. So at the end of the day, we're trying to find something that works for the landlord and something that works for the tenant to where everyone's happy with the process. And the landlord has a tenant and that is somewhat financially stable now because of one of these three options. And the tenant, they're happy because they got the house that they really wanted.
Exactly. And, you know, at the end of the day, as you just mentioned, you know, like everyone has a story, you know, and some things is really hard to, and that's kind of like when we talk to landlords, I always tell them, you know, they're families and they have struggles like you do. So this is just a challenge, but let's just see the whole picture and try to help them and then help you also, you know, you fill your vacancy and then you get a good tenant and you also get the security. So there are always ways to kind of like, because yeah, the idea would be that the landlord gets the perfect tenant, you know, excellent credit score, 3 or 4 times the income, excellent credit, rental history. That's awesome. And there are a lot of applicants like that. But when we see that, you know, sometimes you kind of like, you want to get someone in your house as an investor and you see that there are all these options and kind of like, as you mentioned, like there are ways to protect your investment and the rent payments in a way. So I always tell them use them. You know, there are options that you can, you know, that you can present to the tenant. So it's great of what GoForRent is doing. You know, it's offering kind of like these three options. It's not like GoForRent offers the double deposit or like, you know, the money up front, but things like lease surety and then helping screening. It's awesome. I think it's great.
Hey, realtors, get in front of the renters who are looking to move soon. GoForRent offers a unique opportunity for realtors that want to make money in the fast-paced rental market. At GoForRent, you can sign up to advertise in any MLS area and represent potential clients. Renters are searching for homes daily on GoForRent.com and will contact you to view them. Start advertising and go from chilling to showing today.
You know, my biggest pet peeve with landlords and realtors is that they focus so much on the credit score. And you and I both know that thing can be so deceiving because if you could have a kid just graduated out of college and they are the authorized user on mom, dad's Amex card or Visa, and that kid's credit score would probably be 700 and something. But they aren't the financial responsible party for that credit card. They're just benefiting from their parents paying on time. So, you know, I try not to get them to focus solely on that credit score because, like I said, it could be very, very deceiving when you get down into it. I like to look at those trade lines. Let's see what's going on with the thing and dig down into it. And I like to look at that income. So we verify all that stuff. We want to see where you work, how long you've been there, and how much you're making. And in addition to that, the rental history, verifying that rental history is very, very important. Because I had when we get clients come through all the time, because this is what we do. But when I was out representing landlords, I had a landlord, he told me immediately, I want someone with a 700 credit score, I want their income to be 3 times the rent, I don't want any late payments on rent history. And he just gave me this long list. I'm like, are you renting the house or you want them to buy it? And he paused and he looked at me like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, everything you're mentioning is that's a buyer. So you have to understand why renters rent. Either they're new to the area or they don't have the down payment, or the credit's damaged.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I proposed this thing to him. Let's say that you had a client that, or someone that wanted to rent a home, and they had the income was three times the rent, and they had good rental history, but the credit was in the 500s. What do you want to do? And he's like, well, I think I'll deny. I'm like, well, first of all, you don't want to do that because they pay their rent on time and they pay their other bills on time, but they had some issues in there. What's most important to you? And that's how I kind of set my landlords up when I'm working with them. The first thing I want to see is how you pay your rent. Everything else becomes secondary after that, because if you can't pay your rent, it's going to create a big, big problem for us down the road, where we're constantly having to chase you down to pay the rent. Next thing you know, we're in court following eviction, and this is going to be an ongoing thing with this tenant. No landlord wants those issues. But that's my take on it. I like to look at the rent history first, then I look at the income, then I go to the credit.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. It's exactly like me, Jonathan. Like you just describe it as it should be. You know, like not only the credit score, it's the whole story.
It's the whole story, right?
And then just help them, kind of like just help them out both ends.
Right. So the other thing I want to add to this is, if I know that I have a client that has a damaged file, I need a letter of explanation. Let's present that along with the application to determine what happened, to let the landlord see it in a different light. Because it could have been a one-off thing. They had a divorce and they're trying to rebound from that divorce. Or they lost a job and now they're working again and they're rebounding from that situation. So providing a letter of credit along with the application can help strengthen the file as well.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's the only thing that it gets a little bit tricky is with fair housing. Because sometimes people want to add pictures and then it gets a little bit tricky. But a letter of explanation, I've used it before and it works great, you know, because it shows a little bit more of who they are.
Yes.
And what happened. So as you said, maybe they lost their job or they have some medical issues, and the way that they write it and the way they explain it, sometimes they get landlords comfortable and they're like, hey, you know what? Yeah, they had it rough and let's just help them out.
Right.
Just because of the explanation. But if they only see a credit report, even a trend line, and they see, oh, you know what? Yeah, they didn't. Yeah, it looks like a collection or like something with the student loan, or like they're only going to see that, but they don't see why and what happened. So it gets the human aspect, you know, and then he's kind of like, oh, you know what? Yeah, you know, like I understand what happened. It happened to, like, you know, as a landlord, you could be like, oh, this happened to a friend of mine. So then you connect a little bit more, and then you start being more flexible. So it works. Yep.
That's how it works. Well, I think that's it for today, man. Thank you, Jaime, for participating and having this discussion with me. It's great to talk to realtors that do a lot of leases and a lot of sales, and they're moving forward and they're actively engaged in the industry. So I thank you for that.
Definitely. It's always a pleasure, man, talking to you, and what you guys are doing and building, it's amazing.
Thank you. This was our deep dive into how to protect yourself when leasing to marginal applicants with our guest realtor, Jaime Valdivieso of Uptown Realty Group, Keller Williams Metropolitan in Houston, Texas. I'm Jonathan with Go For Rent.